Om Parthaya Pratipoditam Bhagavata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Kratitam Purana Munina Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitamrita Varshinim Bhagavatim Ashtadashajayinim Ambatvamanusantadami Bhagavad Gita Bhavatveshini.
Verse 14.
122.
Page 122.
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. That's
It smells.
Satatam kirtayanto mam. Satatam kirtayanto mam. Yatantascha tridavrataha. Yatantascha tridavrataha. Namasyantascha mam bhaktya. Namasyantascha mam bhaktya. Nitya yukta upasate. Nitya yukta upasate. Satatam kirtayantaha mam yatantaha cha dridha vrataha namasyantaha cha mam bhaktya nitya yuktaha upasate. In the previous verse in 13, the Mahatmanaha means those whose antakarana, those whose mind is noble or who is spiritual. Swamiji says, this is one place we can use spiritual. They have a spiritual mind. Their mind is noble. It means their mind is not a mind that is self-centered, but a mind that, as we'll see in this verse, Shankara has a beautiful verse statement here in his Bhasha, but a mind that is more spiritually inclined, that is more bent on following such values as ahimsa and daya, compassion, these type of things. So such a mind, the seeker who has such a mind, those people, their prakriti is more sattvic, right? Their nature is more sattvic, as opposed to the previous verse, we were dealing with people whose nature was more rajasic or more tamasic. But these people, whose prakriti is daivin, you know, is more born of the Lord in a sense, reflects awareness, reflects consciousness, reflects wholeness, because it has shanti, as a natural shanti, as sattva, sattva. And so those people, ananya manasaha, they, with a mind which is really not strained toward anything or anyone else, those people, they worship me. They are devoted to me. They serve me. Me who, having known me, they worship me, serve me, having known what? Myself as Bhutadi Avyayam, as the one from whom the whole creation has come, and at the same time being Avyayam, someone who is changeless. My being is changeless, and at the same time the one from whom the whole creation comes. How do they know that? Because these are seekers, these are mumukshus, right, who are seeking to know. They know this only through the Shastra, only through the Vedas. There's no other means of knowledge for it, right? So at least within the whole Hindu tradition at that time, it was the Vedas that is their scripture, and it's the Vedas that unfolds the nature of Ishvara as being Brahman, the one who is Satchitananda, the one who is Satyam Jnanamanantam, the one from whom, who is just pure infinite being, which is not bound by time, not bound by space, not bound by change. And yet that being, that self, that infinite self that we call Brahman, is the one who is the source, the very one from whom the whole creation comes. And that's how it's unfolded in the Vedas. And the seekers, the mumukshus, have shraddha in Ishvara and shraddha in the Vedas that describe Ishvara. Right? And so these people have not yet, they're not jnanis yet, right? But they have shraddha and are seekers. So such people who have a more sattvic disposition, you know, and who find themselves having a mind committed to gaining that knowledge. That's really the nature of a mumukshu. Your mind is committed to knowing that. That's first and foremost. Though we may do all kinds of other things, we might have a lot of responsibilities, a lot of work to do, a lot of children to raise, because on samsara, life, there's a lot of life that has to be lived, a lot of things that have to be done. But in my heart, what is primary is gaining that knowledge, my relationship with Bhagavan. And so here he says, so I just added that relationship to Bhagavan, but here in this next verse he says, how do they do that? How do they... Or in what form, katam? Because how are they? You know, how do they manifest that in their life? So he says, for those such people, satatam kirtiyantaha mam. Satatam means always. They are kirtiyantaha. They're always... Kirtiyantaha means... it can be praising, talking about, appreciating... So these type of people are the people who... Swamiji uses the word actually in his translation, appreciate. I really thought about that word, and that root captures the essence of this kirtiyantaha. They're always appreciating me. Means that in their whole relationship with the creation, they're appreciating Ishwara. You know, in the order, the way everything manifests. You know, you can be appreciating Ishwara's beauty, but you can also continually be appreciating Ishwara as the Karmapala Datta. Means the one who is always continually giving me the fruits of my actions. You know, in that one very famous verse, the Lord says, Krishna says, you be responsible for your actions. You take responsibility for your actions, that they be dharmic, and that they be appropriate to what you want to gain. But always let me be the Karmapala Datta. Know that I'm responsible. I'm the one who gives the results of those actions. If that weren't true, otherwise we would do an action and get what we want.
that
isn't the case, right? We do the action, we know what we want, but we get whatever result we get. And so that whole karma yoga buddhi has to do with being able to receive all of those actions, all of those results as really prasad, as really part of the dialogue between yourself and Ishwara, as being something that comes directly from the Lord. And so always appreciating Ishwara as the whole, you know, as the one who is the self of the entire creation. When we think of Brahman, we don't just think in that Vedas, you don't think of Brahman just by itself. Brahman is the self of Ishwara. We talk like that. Brahman is the self. If we can use different language, we could say Brahman is the truth of Ishwara. It's Brahman, but Ishwara is a conscious being. Ishwara is the Lord. Just so you say, Atma is the truth of is the truth of your body, mind, sense organs. Atma is yourself. The Atma is yourself. What is Ishwara's self? Ishwara's self is Brahman. Right? Ishwara is a conscious being. So what do we name that conscious being? The conscious being of Ishwara. Ishwara, who is the whole infinite creation. But Ishwara is a being. Ishwara is the Lord. It's not just a mechanical nature, the nature of a mechanical creation. When we talk about Ishwara and this whole creation as being Ishwara, we're talking about Ishwara, the Lord. The Lord has a self, you know? So what do we call that self? The self of Ishwara. We call the self of Ishwara Brahman. So what is the whole Vedanta? Is that you, the Atma, is Brahman. That you are Brahman. That's the that's the Vedanta. You are Brahman. Right? If you are Brahman, then you are Ishwara. Because if you are Brahman, you are Ishwara. Because who is Ishwara? Ishwara is Brahman. Right? Who are you? You are the Atma. Unless you say you, your body. You know? But you're a seeker. I'm not going to say you're your body. You hope you're not your body anyway. Are you really your body? Or is there something else that you are? So the whole unfoldment is the recognition that in fact your being is, this body might be you, might be your you, the conscious being, but you, the conscious being, are free of this body. Same situation for Ishwara. Ishwara is totally dependent on the Satchit. The satyam jnanam anantam, the satchit, which is the nature of the self, right? So Ishwara can say, you know, I am a conscious being. And Ishwara will say, because no ajnanam for Ishwara. And I, the conscious being, am totally free of this upadhi. You will say, as a jnani, you will say, I am the Atma, which is Brahman, right? This body, mind, sense organs is myself, is the Atma, but I am totally free of this. This is an upadhi, means a conditioning adjunct. It's something that I can take myself to be this, but in fact, you know, even though this is me, I am free from it. That is the Vedanta. This is me, this body is me, but this me, the I, is free of it. This mind is me, but I am free of it. Right? Otherwise, you get into some kind of a dvaita where there's some self over here and some mind over here, you know? Or some self that is pervading a mind. So some self pervading a mind. As though there's a mind. As though there's something that's being pervaded. Like we can say that in this creation. This is why one of the reasons why all of the drishtantas, all of the illustrations we use in the creation are limited. Because they're existing drishtantas, illustrations that are existing in the creation. Like, for instance, if I say space pervades the whole creation. But I would say that the space, yes, the space is, like if I hold up the cup, space is pervading the cup. But space is not the cup. Space is more subtle than the cup, and it pervades the entire cup. And if I move cup from A to B, or A to B, the space isn't being ripped as I move the cup through it. Right? But so space pervades everything, but then I don't say the space is everything. I don't say the space is the cup. I say the space pervades the cup. Here we're saying the mind is the self. The self is free of the mind. In other words, the mind totally enjoys consciousness. The consciousness is totally pervasive to the mind, right? Totally pervades the mind. There's no place in the mind where the consciousness is not. I'm talking about a waking mind, a vritti, a thought modification. There's no place where you are not in that vritti. The entire vritti, the entire thought is, and it is illumined. There's nothing left out there. Right? Any thought, you can just think of it. You know, have a thought of a pot, you know, have a thought of a plate, a painting, a rug, flower, thought, thought, thought. The entire thought is pervaded. We use this language, right? It's pervaded by consciousness. So is it pervaded by consciousness in the same way that this cup is pervaded by space? Say, not at all. It's not at all the same. In fact, this language of pervasion is misleading because we go and think of the space. We think of, oh, the Atma is like the space. I pervade this whole creation. Mm-hmm. But just like here, I would say the awareness, the space pervades this cup. I can't say the space is the cup. Right? However, what if I have a clay pot and I use the same language and I say, the pot, the clay pervades the pot. It's a little misuse of the word pervade, even though it's true, right? There's no place for the pot where the clay is not, this clay pot. Nothing else is there but clay. So to say, yes, the clay pervades the pot, okay. But there's nothing else there but clay. So there's not a clay pervading a pot, as though there's two things, clay pervading a pot. There's no clay pervading a pot because the pot is nothing but clay. That's our situation here. That's why we have to go to the satya mithya. You have to be able to say that the pot depends on the clay, but the clay doesn't depend on the pot. Without the clay, the pot doesn't exist. But the clay doesn't need to be a pot. It's totally irrelevant for the clay. Whether it's in the shape of a pot or a plate or just a lump. Clay is clay. Nothing's happening to it. It doesn't need pot. Same here. And what's so important about understanding this is that if that's not understood, like say in reference to your mind, if you think of the relationship of your mind to be like the relationship between the cup and space, then your mind is something other than the space, But the space pervades you. Your mind is something other than the conscious being, but the conscious being pervades your mind, and so now the mind, which is different than the conscious being, needs to somehow have an experience of the conscious being, which is pervading it. You see what I'm saying? There's a difference. There's two things there. And so you can think that you now have, the mind has to have an experience of the Atma in some way. You know, because the Atma, the self, is different, really, than what it pervades. But that's not the situation. That's not the Satyam Mithya. That's why we always go to the good old clay pot. Because if you understand that your mind, your body, your sense organs, just to start, starting with the upadhi, yes, consciousness pervades it, you know, but there's no separate thing there. So the word pervading has to be dismissed so that I can say to a more of a Satyam Mithya language, where I can say, I, this body, mind, sense, organs complex that has the sense of individuality, that I am different from you, etc. This body, mind, sense, organs has a self. It is a conscious being. There's no being, there's no conscious, there's the consciousness, the existent being, the I am a conscious being, right? That this body, mind, sense, organs enjoys is in fact me. It is in fact the Atma. When I say I am a conscious being, as an Ajnani, as a total Ajnani, you say I am a conscious being, you know, then the conscious being you're referring to is Brahman. It is Brahman, but you take it to be one with the upadhi, with the conditioning adjunct. So you say, I am a conscious being. That is absolutely true, but you don't know the other part. You say, I am a conscious being, and the conscious being that I am is this body. I, this body, mind, sense organs, am a conscious being, and this conscious being that I am is this body, mind, sense organs. And so when this body, mind, sense organs dies or changes, I change. That's ajnanam. That is the ignorance. Jnanam is the recognition that, oh, it's not quite like that. I, this body, mind, sense organs, I am a conscious being, I am me. The very one you think of as being me, you know. Your very personal sense of self. When you say that this body, mind, sense organs is me, there's a very personal me there. That me, that the body, mind, sense organs enjoys as me, is true, is me, and this me is not dependent on the body, mind, sense organs. It is free. It is limitless. That is the knowledge. And so here, the satatam kirtayantaha mam yet yatantascha dridhavrataha. So here they say, the one who is always recognizing me, appreciating me, in what form? Really, as the Satyam Mithya. Appreciating me in this way, Bhutadi Avyayam, means I am the Bhutadim, I am the very source of all of this, and yet I never change. That is Satyam Mithya. If I say, I am the source of this whole creation, because now Ishwara is talking, Krishna is talking as Ishwara, I am the source of this whole creation. This whole creation comes into being, is sustained, and resolves, you know, into being. It projects, sustains, and goes into unmanifest condition. And while it's manifest, it's continually changing. And it, as long as it is here, it is. It exists. Right? Everything. As long as it is here, it is. It exists. Across the board, there's no exceptions. It's here on the smallest level to the most grand level. It is. It enjoys being. The only thing is that everything about it is coming into being and going out of being. But as long as it is here, it is. And as long as it is here, it is known. In this sense, I would say, it is known not by you, but you. It can be known. It is known by Ishwar. It is known as the whole, because all of it is manifest in consciousness. And it has the capacity to be known by you. As long as it is manifest, it is known, because it has conscious being as its very sub, as its as its content, and it manifests as in Ishwara as manifest knowledge. So if it's manifest knowledge, it is known. And if it is known as manifest knowledge from the standpoint of Ishwara, it has the capacity to be known by a jiva as long as the proper means of knowledge is there. Like say you're looking at an atom, you need a microscope, and you need to be looking through the microscope, right, in order to, and focus with it focused on the atom. Right? Or you need to say you want to look at the Milky Way or something. You need to have a telescope. You need to be looking at through the telescope at the Milky Way in order to see it or to appreciate it. But if you can direct an appropriate means of knowledge to the object, it can be known because it's manifest. Right? So everything in the creation enjoys that satya-mitya relationship, and that is the way in which somebody who knows or is gaining knowledge of me appreciates me in that way. Who are they talking about? Yatantataha. Those who have made proper effort. The proper effort means they're talking about a sannyasi, really. The ones who have made the proper effort means they've done shravana, manana, nididhyasana. That's the upayanishta. Upayanishta means what is the appropriate effort for gaining this knowledge? Shravana, manana, nididhyasana. I need to be exposed by an appropriate teacher to the pramana, which is the Upanishads. I need to be exposed to that teaching methodology that can unfold the vision of the Upanishads, of the Vedas. Right? And then I need to do manana, means I need to be able to withstand the scrutiny. First of all, I have to understand the vision as it is. I have to see it as it is, as it's unfolded by the Upanishads. And then I need to be able to answer the doubts of all of those people and darshanas and your own mind that says, well, I think it should be this way and not that way. Those are your own doubts, your own personal doubts, the doubts of others, and the doubts of other philosophical systems. But the doubts of other philosophical systems are your doubts. That's not really about that. It's the other philosophical systems. You have to answer that. But it's really your doubts where they say, yeah, but it could be this way too. And it could be that way. The Upanishads say this, but it could be that way. That's manana. It's the resolution of all of those doubts that are saying, yeah, but it could be like this. And you have to say, well, could it really? Could it really be like this? Let's just look at it there. Let's look at step by step by step by step. Is that really a possibility? Every single one of those has to be dealt with. That is manana. Nididhyasana is where what you see at the time of teaching with the shravana, really, that vision being unfolded, you're able to sit. You sit in that vision. It's like shravana in slow motion, you know, where your mind is allowed to just in slow motion be able to hold those shruti statements in a way like asangoham, shantoham, chaitanyoham, you know. I am fullness, I am consciousness, I am wholeness, Ishwaroham, I am Ishwara. To say that, I am Ishwara, you have to know what Ishwara is. You have to have seen that so that you know the word has meaning. And then you say, I am Ishwara. You know, that's a Mahavakya, I am Ishwara. You sit with that and see it. I am a Sangaha. My being is not attached to anything. There's nothing that can change it or harm it. You sit with that, the reality of it. And sit in that. That's nididhyasana. So these are just these, shravana, manana, nididhyasana are just the three prongs of the teaching methodology for you to see. And then you need that's called upayanishta. That's the teaching methodology for gaining this knowledge. But then you need what's called upayanishta. Upayanishta is the mind's the one that has to gain the knowledge. Right? These are the means of knowledge, so you have to have the pramana. But then that pramana has to act upon the mind. The mind is the one that has to see. And so that mind itself needs to have certain qualifications to make it an adhikari. So that's where Shankara talks in reference to this yatantaha, the one who is making proper effort. This is how he describes the adhikari. He says, Indriya, for the yatantaha means the one who's making the proper efforts. He says, Indriya upasamhara, first one. Indriya upasamhara means that the indriyas, the sense organs, are under your control. Now, the sense organs are not, you know, pulling you toward your likes and dislikes. Like you see, for instance, I'll give you one of mine. Cherry Garcia. I would just love to have a big bowl of Cherry Garcia. Now, is that the right thing to do right now? Is that good for me right now at this time in my life? No, it's not. No, but yes, what I wanted anyway. That's the lack of indriya upasamhara. I don't have the control, and we don't have the control over what we choose to do, what is good for us and what isn't. We know. We know, but we don't have the control. We don't have our indriyas means the sense organs, right? Really, it's the mind, but the sense pursuits. It's the mind in reference to sense pursuits. We don't have them under the control to say yes or no. If you have them under control, you can say yes or no. It's not a problem. But having the sense organs fully under control is quite an accomplishment, really. And so a person has to work on that. Not in all areas, and probably most areas, that control is there. There's some areas where it isn't there. Those are the areas, right, where we need to where we have a commitment to working on that. The next one, he says, and so with the indriya upasamhara, then he says shama dhamma. The shama dhamma paritutiksha, all of these. Shama means, is important, it's a control over the vrittis. I have the thought modifications. I can let a thought go. Say a thought comes through that could grab you and then take you on an emotional ride. You have the capacity to say, no, I'm going to let that one go. For all thoughts. We have that shama for probably 99.9% of our thoughts, the thought flow that comes through, they just come and they go. They're not a problem at all. Just drifting through. But then there's those handful of thoughts, right, that don't drift through. They grab us. They grab us, you know, and then we're stuck with them. Once they grab you, you can't say, you know, just please go. It's too late. They've already grabbed, and now you have to wait it out. And when you, because it's in your body now. So now you're waiting out the thing. You need dhamma. Once a thought grabs you, and you're out of control now, you need that dhamma that means that you can contain it inside of yourself without acting out. Dhamma means, all right, I'm raging or furious or hurt or angry or ready to clobber somebody, whatever it may be. All of that energy is inside. But I can say, you know, if I can say, but we're not going to do that. We'll just keep that to ourselves. We will take a walk. Right? We will not spew. Spew means with words. We are not going to attack verbally. We'll keep it to ourselves. We're not going to punch or hit or kick. We're going to take a walk instead. That's dhamma. That's dhamma. Mm. You know, most of us, for most of the time, we have dhamma. Though that's not the problem. You could even say, you know, I have dhamma 99% of the time. But that 1% is a lot. That 1% counts, you know. So, it's the 1% we have to work on. It's not to not have, it's we know that we have dhamma and sometimes we don't. That sometimes we don't, our commitment is to work on that. And that sometimes we have shamba, sometimes we don't. The commitment is to work on that, right? The indriya upasamhara, most of the time, yes. That area where it's not there, that's where we have our commitment. Then the next one he says, get rid of the shamba dhamma. The next one he says is daya. Daya is compassion. because this is really and the one after that is a hymn song. So he gets rid of these sensory ones first, control of the upadhi. But now he gets into those very positive emotions where, and also we fail there too. It's not about, the problem is not failure. It's that that failure is there. But with the dhyaya, with compassion, the value for compassion is there. You know, and compassion also is a quality that is natural to you when nothing is interfering. In other words, when the desire template of I want this to be happy is not in play, I need this to be happy is not in play, right? So it's not conflicting with the situation that naturally calls for compassion. If there's no conflict, you will be compassionate because it's human, it's natural. You know, you find yourself, you're always drawn to help, or if somebody is hurting, or somebody is, you know, something happens, either you don't know the person or whatever it is, you have no idea, but the person is in need of some help and you naturally, or animal, you know, even little plants, you know, if they're in need of some help, you're naturally drawn to help, except when there's a conflict between your own needs. And that's when the compassion is something that one has to work on. It requires objectification. Because otherwise it is natural. That's what we have to remember. We're naturally good people. Compassionate people, kind people, you know, that wholeness and Ashantavritti. That is natural, but it's things that get in the way. And so we work on ourselves to, you know, gain this value for compassion and ahimsa, non-injury. You know, which is the highest value. I talked about this last week, that non-injury, ahimsa, is the highest value in sannyasa. The yetis here that they're talking about are the sannyasis. You don't really have to be an orange to be a sannyasi. But that maturity is what we're all working on ourselves. And so the compassion and the non-injury of humans or animals or plants or any living being to have that value for ahimsa, for non-injury, and for compassion. And so I'm just saying things like, you know, when you find yourself you're not compassionate, then that's where you have to be with yourself and look at it. Why? What is getting in my way of that? You know, what is it that I need or isn't getting met that is usurping that value? Right? It's overwhelming that value. So that value for the time being gets thrown out the window. So that's where the viveka, you know, that's where our work is to work on ourselves around that particular value. So it's saying, so compassion and ahimsa. And he says, so he goes like this, indriya upasamhara shama dhamma daya, and then ahimsa adi, etc., lakshanaihi dharmaihi. By these dharmas, it is with these qualities that we are striving for that being an adhikari. We are striving to develop these qualities. So I thought it was really beautiful for Shankara to throw in with the shamadam and all of this sense control to throw in this ahimsa and daya, because with that there's no manifest love. You know, you can kind of be neutral toward everything in a way, holding everything inside, but you're not working on that manifest love. Like ahimsa, there's manifest love. Right? In daya, there's manifest love. And so that just takes consciousness. So he says that those people who are making that appropriate effort toward your antakarna shuddhi, purity of mind, and also shravana manana nanda dhyasana, you're doing these things, and you have a dhrida vrataha. For such people, they're doing this and they have a very firm dhrida vrata. Vrata means like a vow, but here Swamiji will say more. It's like it's a commitment. You have a firm commitment, you know, to working on these things, to your exposure to the teaching, to gaining thorough your knowledge, to gaining a thorough knowledge, You know, not just kind of a fly-by-night, you know, a little lecture here, a little talk here, a little talk there, and you put it all together yourself. There's a lot to understand. Shravana is, you know, it's an ongoing study. It's an ongoing process. So there's a commitment to that process, to that study, Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana. And there's a commitment to that, and there's a commitment to your own antakarana shuddhi. You don't take it lightly. You take it, you have a commitment to it. And then, so such a person, then he says...
What else is it called again?
Dridha means firm. And vrata means a vow, so dridha vrata. And so instead of vow, maybe you can think of it in terms of a real commitment. The vow is a commitment toward that. Then he says, so such people, namasyantaha mam, they surrendering to me, meaning recognizing me as the Karmapala Datta, means as the infinite order, the one, you know, you find because of your prarabdha karma, the very karmas that brought you here, you are part of a bigger story, you know. And so to surrender to that bigger story and to do your best on day by day by day, you know, to participate in that story. Swamiji has often talked a lot about this particular thing in terms of to really be a sadhu, he'll even say to be a Vedantin, to be a sadhu, you know. The Vedantins enough. Sadhu means I don't make sadhu into it. You don't have to have orange for sadhu, but you have to be living that life, that committed life. You really, to be a Vedantin, you have to take life day by day. Just one day at a time, one moment at a time. This is what Bhagavan has given me today. This is what is here today. And this is what I do my best today. And this is the order for today. This is the order for today. Tomorrow, it may change, right? It may change tomorrow. But tomorrow when it changes, then that will be today's order and what I'm here to do today. So for a Vedantin, really the relationship is an unfolding relationship with Ishvara, and you take it day by day by day, follow Dharma, and you do your best for the day. And that is it. Swamiji lives... Honestly, you know, he said this in so many ways, but I've experienced it over the many, many years of his. He absolutely lives his life this way. He is fully present to the moment and to the day. Fully present. And if there's decisions to be made now, he will make the decisions. And because that's what's here, you know. Mm-hmm. If there's something that needs to be done now, that's what's here now. And so he's totally engaged in it. Now, if something comes a few hours later that negates that decision, then he's totally engaged with that. See what I mean? And if there's some planning that needs to do with it for the future, that planning is necessary now. It's right on your lap. It's right there to be done now. And so the person who is really, what he won't say exactly like this, but kind of successful in Vedanta, you know, in actually living this, you know, that has to be there. And it's true. I mean, there's you and Ishvara, right? Or you can go a step further. There is Ishvara, you know? And there's nothing about you that is not Ishvara. That's what's so interesting, you know? There's the Pratibhasaka, there's the projections and all of that. But just like the projecting a snake on a rope, you know, you can do that and you can have all kinds of fears. That's all the laws. You've seen a snake, you're reacting to the snake, but the snake is not real. And the snake will never create a rope. Right? The projected snake will never create a rope. But all of your projections, this is what we call Jiva Srishti. All of, you know, there's Ishvara Srishti. Let me give you these two terms for those of you who don't know. There's Ishvara Srishti, means the Lord's creation. The manifest knowledge is Ishvara manifests as this infinite creation, manifest knowledge. That's Ishvara, that's the Lord. It is what it is. Then, and you're all part of Ishvara. Here we are, here, all of us, Ishvara Srishti. You can't just think it away, you know? It's here. Yeah. So this is the Lord's creation, it's the objective shared reality. Jiva Srishti is the snake on the rope. It's what you project on top of the Ishvara Srishti, right? Your projection will definitely create, say the projection means it's not really what's going on, like there's no snake there. But it will create havoc in you, emotional havoc, if it's a negative projection. Right? And a positive projection will create emotional havoc too, a little later. Right? And just think about it. Say you have a projection on somebody, say a negative projection on somebody. It's not true at all. There's no reality to it, but you have that projection and you're suffering the projection. Because you have the negative projection, so you're experiencing and suffering the negative feelings that the negative projection excites, just like the snake, right? Now, the other person who's getting the negative stuff can start also going through all kinds of stuff based upon that negative projection. They are projecting back negative stuff, you know? It gets very complicated. Yeah. It becomes like it's kind of thick with negative projections flying all over, right? But say, so the person is receiving the negative projection, this is, we learn all this in psychology too, the person who's receiving the negative projection can own it, take it on, and suffer from the negative projection that's being thrown his or her way. So they will take it on and respond to it. So now there's kind of a double projection going on. But what if the person who is receiving the negative projection doesn't take it on? Why should they? Really? I mean, because there's nothing true about it. It's like the rope doesn't take on the snake. If somebody's not receiving the negative projection, then they're not a player in that particular game, and it will break that negative projection, right? Mm. If the other person doesn't throw some zinger out that is based upon the other negative projection, but actually doesn't receive the negative projection because it's a projection and it's not true, right? Then there's a breaking of the projection, and that person remains free. Was free of the projection before the projection came, during the projection, and after the projection. That's kind of the Ishvara Srishti. There's nobody receiving it. That's why Swamiji, if you've ever heard him say this, he'll say, you know, don't take it inside. Don't take it. When these projections are coming, and you're in a situation where you're receiving some projections, don't let it come inside. Keep it outside. That's how he says that. Do you understand? It's like, because what happens is somebody's throwing a negative projection at you and you swallow it, you take it inside, then you feel it. Like, for instance, somebody hates you. Then what happens? You feel hated. You've taken it inside then. Somebody's angry at you, then you feel hurt. You've taken it inside. He says, keep all of these people outside. Keep all of these projections outside. Because they're projections. Don't take them in. And so that's a really, you know, that's a wonderful, wonderful thing to learn, is to be able to do that. So, anyway. So, namasyantaha, bowing down, you know, surrendering to me as the Karmapala Datta, you know. Then, nitya-yukta, then he has something really important here. Always nitya-yukta, always being endowed with bhakti. Bhakti means love, you know. Always, it's not just intellectual. You know, this teaching isn't just intellectual. There's bhakti, there's devotion, there's love, there's that bhava, that caring and that love and that relationship and that commitment. So all of this yatantaha, all of this proper effort and all of that, it's not without love, it's with bhakti, you know.
Did you say endowed with bhakti?
Yeah, the yukta means endowed, means you have bhakti. Oh. Endowed, you have it.
Okay.
Nitya means that it's unwavering. It's not like you love Ishvara when he's acting like this and then you hate Ishvara when he's acting like that. I thought you were really, really wonderful. You know. and I felt so devoted to you, and look at how you really are. It's not like that. It's a love that wants to know and understand. Yeah. That's that bhakti. It's like an absolute love. You know, it's an absolute love that, you know, and a seeking of knowledge. You see, the Satchitananda also, you have that understanding for a Hindu anyway, with somebody who is with the Vedas, you know just intellectually that the very source of ananda or fullness or love is Bhagavan, is Brahman. You know that intellectually from the Vedas, you know. And you also feel a natural, that you're a bhakta, you have a natural love and devotion toward the Lord. So without that, really without that shraddha and that bhakti as means the love and devotion, then what is there really in this? It's just some intellectual pursuit. As much as religion, it's religion and spirituality here. It's a devotion and a love for Bhagavan. And then this whole study is taking place in that shraddha and in that bhakti. And that bhakti is nitya. Means it's not a bhakti that comes and goes. You know? Even though you can get mad at Ishwara, but it's how you can get mad at your beloved. You know, there's a lot of stories in the Mahabharata and the Ramayana from Ishwara's great, one of his great bhaktas. How could you have done this? But the whole attention is on that one, is on the Lord. Yes. You've done this and you've done that. And now you're doing this and that. How? But there's a soul, you know, bhakti and devotion and care there. So that with that heart, this knowledge takes place. And it's with that heart that all of this striving, you know, to gain these qualities and whatnot so that I can own up this knowledge, all of it is done within that bhakti. Okay, why don't we stop here? And then the next three verses or four verses kind of go together, so I'll do them as a set next week. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.
Substratum, you also used another word also, the content. And to me, you know, English being my second language, what is that? It changes something for me.
Substratum is not the I try not to use that word too much, though. Sometimes the word adhishtana is translated as substratum. Like the rope is the adhishtana, it's the basis. of the snake. Without the adhisthana, there can't be any mitya. And so without the substratum or the thing that is actually there underlying underlying the mitya or the projection can't be there. But the problem with the word substratum is that then you think of a substratum on which something is sitting. And so even when you think of adhisthana and, you know, the ade and the adhisthana, you can think like that because it's often translated as substratum. So in a way, content is better, but then by content you have to be clear, like substance, the truth of something, the substance of something, the content of something. In the end, you have to talk about that satya-mitya relationship, right? Because really what it is for satya-mitya, there really is only one thing there. The other thing has no reality at all apart from the thing that is actually there. You see what I mean? Like the pot has no reality at all apart from the clay. So the clay is the adhisthana, the thing that supports the mitya, the thing that that the mitya requires for it to be. So you could say like content or substance, but it's really the truth of what is there. See what I mean?
Yeah, I see. Yeah, well, that actually leads up to the other question. I still have such a hard time to not separate satya and mitya. I understand that I'm not the body, I can objectify it and so forth, but it's still to not separate them, you know? I mean, it's like there's the me, and that lights up the body and the mind and all objective. Experiences. But I still see the me as something other.
I know.
I mean, intuitively I can say yes.
Yeah. But that's why we have to look into, like, see if we use the meadow example, the meadow example is very easy because you're already in the Ishwara position. Right, if I imagine a meadow, then I can see that the whole meadow and everyone in it is really me and has me for its truth. Are you with me on that?
Yeah.
Okay. But now, here, I'm not in the Ishwara position. I'm in the Jiva position. In this world, in this room, I'm not in the Ishwara position, I'm in the Jiva position. See what I mean? Like in the meadow, it's easy. You're automatically in the Ishwara
right.
position. But the person in the meadow, say you have a character in the meadow, they're in the Jiva position. Right? Now, they have a much more difficult task. Because they're going to be experiencing the world, the meadow, from within the meadow, looking through their sense organs. And because of their sense organs, they can look at this body and say, look, this is real. And I see this, and it has weight, and I can perceive and act within the meadow, you know? And then if I say I'm a character in the meadow, I just say, well, look, I'm going to meditate. And I can recognize the subject-object relationship when I meditate. I can objectify my body, you know? And I can differentiate myself from this body, right? And so now I'm going to say, as the character in the meadow, I'm going to say, I can understand theoretically, but my experience is that I am different from the body that I'm illumining, right? So now how are we going to solve this problem? So what we have to do is start looking at what we... As the Ishwara position, I don't have to do this. But as a jiva within Ishwara, then I have to start looking at this stuff that we call matter. This is a physical body. It's material. It's matter. This is matter. You know? This is matter. So matter, I am illumining something that is not consciousness. See what I mean? So now I have to, in order to, so now what has to happen is to for me to be able to see this, all of this as mithya, I have to be able to see it as consciousness. I have to see that all of this is nothing but consciousness, such shit. Otherwise, this subject-object thing is not really going to work because this object is matter and I am consciousness. Right? So, for it to be satya mithya, I have to see that this body that I'm perceiving is, in fact, nothing but consciousness. Just like I can see, you know, I kind of have the Ishwara drishti toward the clay pot because I can see, without any doubt, that the clay is the pot. That the pot depends on the clay. There's nothing but clay there. I have to be able to see that. When I'm looking out through these sense organs, I have to be able to see, to recognize, to know, to experience, to feel. There's nothing here but consciousness. So how do we do it? Well, first of all, we have to start analyzing this thing that you call matter to see if there really is such a thing. Is there such a thing here as matter? As a real object, you know? And there's so many different unfoldments that we have to do that you have to take your mind through one by one by one. Like, for instance, just like you know that we don't have to think about it at all, or we know it, but we don't do anything about it. This body's 90% air, or is it higher than that? 90% space, some huge thing. Huge.
16, 18 digits behind the comma.
Yeah, yeah, you know.
What are you talking about?
That if I were to take a magnifying glass, a microscope, to this body and take a look at it, somehow blow up to see what, you know, what it really is, we'd see that a huge percentage of this body is only space. That's how much distance there is between, say, an electron and an electron. A huge, vast is space. But we don't think about that because what we see is something concrete here.
Yeah, solid.
Solid. But actually, it isn't at all. But so that's just with science. But say we now start to just use logic to analyze our experience to see if there really is something here that has substance other than the very sat-chit, which is me. So this analysis has to be very thorough. Now just to put that aside for a minute, if I have the Ishwara position in reference to my dream or to my imagination, I don't really have to do that because I experience the maya capacity of my imagination. I experience myself not changing at all and the whole creation projecting and resolving without anything happening to me. I experience that with the dream. I experience that with imagination. And so then I can really understand what they mean by maya, you know? It's not such an issue. But here for me, within the maya dream, or within the maya Ishwara, right? Now I have to convince myself that this, even though I can pinch it and it has weight, is of the same material as my dream or my meadow imagination. That it is the same maya, not a different maya. It's the same maya. But my little bit of maya here is taking place within, you know, the total maya. It's still maya. You know, the maya meadow is the same material as the maya creation. But I have a different vantage point. You know, the maya character can pinch, you know, and do all of that. And there's a certain order within the dream.
But there has to be a point with this logic. You know, the logic can be accepted, you know, conceptually, yeah, that all makes sense. But then there has to be, like, I imagine, like a jump or leap or a recognition. It's not just logic.
It's not just logic.
Yeah.
There's three things that have to take place for you. One is Shruti.
Right.
The Shruti, the Pramana, has to unfold it for you so that you can see it. That Pramana has to be a Pramana of your own experience. That means the experience has to be there. So Shruti, Anubhava, and Yukti.
Right.
So there's a lot of logic, but the logic is aimed at your experience, not away from it. And here, like say now, in this room, which you're experiencing through your sense organs, there is nothing in your experience that is away from Satchit. So you can experience the Satchit, the conscious being, you know, as the very substance of everything in this room. Or we can start out with, you can experience as nothing, let's put it this way, because in the end you see everything as just that Satchit. But you can experience it easily as, I'll say like this, nothing being away from it. Nothing is away from Satchit. So if you don't think that's true, let's look at it this way. Because you have to see it. It's not just, this isn't just theoretical. Your mind has to recognize it. Think like this. Your mind, let's look at how the mind works. You're using your eyes, say, to perceive the room right now. So here you are, you're seated. Your eyes are open, and I'm asking you right now, just through your eyes, perceive the room, okay? Now, you are perceiving the room as long as you're not daydreaming. Well, I'm asking you, but one of you is daydreaming, right? I'm saying, okay, everybody, just calm down now. I want you just to, you know, open your eyes and look at whatever you see in the room. And so everybody's doing this except for one person, you know, who's like this. Then they go like that. What'd you say? But all that means is that the sense organs require the mind to be using them. They could be up daydreaming or whatever. They require the mind to use them. What that means is that the sense organs create a vritti, a thought modification, which then you illumine, right? That's what the mind does. You have thought after thought after thought. Every thought, it comes, it is known. Right? When it's there, the thought comes, the thought is known. That thought, that's true, whether the thought is an emotion, a memory, an intellection of some sort, you know, you're thinking about something, it's thought, 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 or perception, or sensory perception, you know, or the sense of touch. Say I'm going like this. I'm just talking to you, you know. I have no idea I'm going like this. Somebody says, hey, you're rubbing your arm. Was I rubbing my arm? Just because my mind wasn't there, you know. So you need the sense organs require the mind to form a thought modification in the mind. Whatever the thought, so that's how you know this room. Right? You know this room because you have a thought modification of it. It's clear on that? Or you know the memory, because you have a thought modification, the memory is known. Any vritti, it is known. Do you pervade the vritti or not? And there's no vritti can take place without you. The vritti is, and it is known, because of you. Now, say you have a vritti, and you're looking at the whole room. So now you have a room vritti. Vritti means thought modification. You have a room vritti. The entire vritti is, and it is known, because of you. So in terms of your experience, every experience, you pervade, you give your being and your isness and your knownness to the vritti. It doesn't matter what the vritti is. It could be a vritti of a monkey with a horse head and a tail. Doesn't make any difference. Whatever you imagine, whatever you see, whatever you think, whatever you remember, Whatever the vritti is, and it is known because of you, not because of it. The vritti comes into being, goes out of being. All vrittis are like that. And what does that mean is that in your experience, every experience, which is only your vritti, is what you're experiencing, you are pervasive to the vritti. There's no part of the vritti which is not pervaded by you. Now, it's so interesting because you're totally able and willing to see that. If I ask you to imagine a meadow or to think of a cup or a flower or a tree, perfectly all right. Yes, yes, the tree is and it is known. That, imagine a tree. The tree is and it is known. It is pervaded by me. There's no part of the tree that's away from me. Imagine a city with people walking. Yes, the whole vritti, it is known, right? It's nothing in it is away from me. Perfect. Now, think of it using your sense organs, make a vritti. Through your sense perception, still a vritti. It is and it is known because of me. Well, I don't know because... Yeah, do you see what I mean? The objection comes right away. The objection comes right away. Because I have... a dehatma buddhi. Dehatma buddhi means I have a notion, a commitment, you know, that that I am this body. That is that commitment. And that commitment overrides this little particular logic, even though it's completely true.
And this body makes me.
Yeah, I mean, it's just whatever the belief system is about my being a body in this world, that commitment overrides this little piece of logic, even though this piece of logic is indisputable, in a sense. There's so much logic to show that your knowledge of the world, of the imagination, of the memory, of the different types of thoughts take place in the form of vritti, and the vritti is illumined by me, known by me. No matter what the source of the vritti, whether it's through a perception or through a memory or through an imagination, it makes no difference. It is pervaded by me, it is known by me. I give it its being and its consciousness.
Right. You know this word, actually, when you're unfolding all that, I realize this word away from is a bit problematic, because when you say it's not away from me, away, you can say something's not away from me, it's with me. So you've still got two things. You've got the thing that's not away from me, it's with me, or near
me. Yeah, that's right.
But really what you're saying is, it is me. Right.
Well, it's satya mitya.
Yeah.
It is me, but I'm not it.
Right.
So when I say away from, I mean I can't, there's no distance between me and it. You know?
Right, but in the dream, in the meadow, all that is me. I mean, that is me. That, the material of it, the whole thing, that everything in it
and
is
me. Yeah, and that's where we have to go. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
But see, the thing is, with the meadow... Mm-hmm. Like, we know that, and we know the satya mitya. Like, even when you say, the whole thing is me, when you say that, and we're still talking about the meadow being there in the experience, the satya mitya, that the meadow depends on me, and I am free from the meadow, that's understood.
Yeah.
Right? Because we have to have a word, maya. Because there's a meadow that's being experienced there, but it's nothing but me, right? And so, I can understand the way is not the best. We have to use different words. But you have to start also from where the person is, right? Like, say, in this world, even I could say like this, if once I establish what a vritti is, the thought modification, I can establish that everything that you know takes place requires a vritti, requires a thought modification. And that thought modification, you know, is not, see, if I say pervaded, I can start by saying it's not away from you. I can't say it is you. I can't start with that. I can't say, to me, I can't anyway. I can't start by saying, and that thought modification is you. I want to be able to show that there's a relationship between you and the asatyamitya relationship between you and the thought modification, no matter whether the thought modification is generated by sense perception or by a memory or by anything else.
Why don't we just stick with form and essence, you know, like with clay and form, or, you know, like gold and form, and you don't have that problem. Because obviously, in terms of not away from, the cup is always with the clay. It's
but you have to show that the... That's true, but this is the problem I have with it, that
okay.
is that the clay itself, because it's only because it's taken within in time and space, there's a satyamitya relationship, but the clay seems to be modifying. Its essence is not changing, but it is changing into the form. Consciousness is not... Even remaining consciousness without changing is consciousness, but consciousness has no time and space, so it's not modifying into the form.
Right, but let's say if you take gold instead of clay, it's a little easier. The color never changes, the weight never changes, it's just form. So you could say the gold doesn't change, stays totally unchanged. The only thing that ever changes is the form. Gold is not modified at all.
That's true.
Never becomes lighter, never becomes silvery, it always stays golden in color, always same specific weight.
But there's an important difference in my mind between, I mean, that we use both of these drishtantas, like for instance, we use clay pot or gold chain, you know, and we use rope snake, you know, and the relationship with the mind, or even with Ishwara, with the Maya Upadi, is much more like rope snake, even though there's a problem there and you have to bring in the clay pot. Because consciousness, your being, isn't subject to time or space. There is no change, no modification at all in any way. And from this changeless me that is free from time and space, an entire creation in which there is time and space manifests. And so there's a huge difference between the time and space manifest creation and the self, which is its very being that has no time and space. And so somehow I feel like we have to, and most teaching methodologies that we use, we have to juxtapose these two so that you can see both. Like with the clay pot is so important because you see there's nothing there but clay. And here there's nothing there at all but consciousness here, you know. And if I go into all of the names, and like this, what you're saying, if I go, which is true, if I go into the nature of all of the names and forms, just take them apart. Keep taking the form off to smaller forms, smaller forms, smaller forms. What you're all, the only thing that ever remains there is Satchit, consciousness, as the very substance. Like this, like the only thing that remains in the analysis of clay, of the clay pot, is clay. If I break the pot apart into shards, then there's clay shards. If I break them into dust, then there's clay dust. Clay molecules, clay atoms, clay electrons. It goes on and on like that. There's just clay, 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 clay. So here, as I analyze the creation, it's the only thing that ever remains as I break these parts, these things apart, so that you see there's no thing there. The thing that remains as the constant is the isness, the Satchit. So that's very much this clay pot, and that drishtanta works perfectly. But somehow for the... You might be able to do it, like you say, with that.
I mean,
I'm not able to do it
no,
in a way that fits my vision.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, what I wonder is why it seems like, and this is how it seems to me, and I don't know if other people have this problem, but it's like, okay, it's not, it's easy to know, to recognize myself as consciousness.
Yes.
Limitless consciousness, mm-hmm. changes, all those things. In relationship to not an object, mm-hmm. in relationship to myself. But then, even though I totally get the logic and I can even appreciate it when I see things, yes, it is, it exists, that's self-evident, such it, yes. And yet, it doesn't seem the same as the recognition of myself as consciousness. Somehow it's...
What doesn't seem the same?
That when I look at around at the creation, I say, yes, you know, I get the logic, I understand it.
No, because what's happened, mm-hmm. what happens is yeah. that you haven't, you... The such it has to be allowed to not be objectified. If you don't objectify it, which it isn't objectified, such it, consciousness, is not objectified. You can't look at it.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And it's not locatable.
Yeah.
Okay? So you have this perception of the room that is taking place, has for its very being such it. Which is not something that you're going to be looking at, but something which none of the perception is away from.
Okay.
Now I'm using away from again.
No, that's okay. I just, I don't know why I can't. I mean, I totally get the logic and it.
But it's no.
But there's some.
Don't worry about the logic. Mm. Just try to see the fact of it.
Mm.
Like your sense, the sense of self. When I say that, just as me, the conscious being that you are. That the one that isn't changing, just your own presence, you know? And then so focus on that for the moment. Do you recognize that? Now use your eyes to look at these forms that you see,
mm-hmm.
right? Now, where are you and where are the forms? There's no form that's away from your being. That can be separated. The thing is that the thing is that Dehatma Buddhi
yeah.
means that the conviction that I am the body is so strong, you know, that it's hard for me to let me be in the middle of the vritti instead of in the middle of the body. I don't know if those words make sense, but okay, say, let me just describe. Then we're going to stop, okay? So I've got to go to bed, actually. But say, okay, you're looking at this room through your eyes. Your body is included in, you know, you can see this part of your body and everything else, right? Now, what you're used to doing is having the me only be associated with this body. But actually... The whole vritti, right? I am the center or the being, the me of the entire vritti, not just this body. So you have to, there's a little shift that has to take place there where you release yourself from this body. This body that's looking out through these eyes.
You know, you also feel like the me or the presence of me is inside the body.
Yes, but it isn't.
That's
what I'm trying to... That's where you have to just relax for a minute and you'll see that isn't true at all. You're not contained. The me is not contained in this body. But the body-mind thinks it is. It's only... It thinks it is until it sees that, oh, it isn't, really. There's no containing it. It's not contained anywhere.
Then if you can say that you're not inside this body, you're not held by this body, then you can say all of this is consciousness. But as long as you feel like you're the body,
that's right.
Impossible to say.
Yeah, it becomes the Dehatma Buddhi is so much that it's hard for you to recognize it's the unencumbered asanga nature of.
But don't the vrittis take place in the body? I mean, they take place in the brain, which is in the body.
Well, you can say all of that. That's true, you know. But then when we get into that, if you want to get into brain function and all of that, then we have to, because brain function is physical, then you have to look at, we're analyzing matter again. That's why matter is so important. This becomes a doubt. It's why matter is so important. Is there such a thing as matter versus consciousness? Mm-hmm. Or is this really matter? Mm-hmm. And is consciousness is something that's non-objectifiable? Matter is objectifiable, but is there matter? Is this Maya that you can call matter? We're saying it's Maya. You can say, is matter Maya, or is it matter? Is matter Maya? Is matter Mithya? What if you say, is matter Mithya? If matter is Mithya, what's the Adhishtana? Right, the Adhishtana is such shit, is consciousness. If matter is Mithya. If matter is Mithya, matter is Maya. Yama iti Maya, that which is not is Maya. We have to stop.